And then now, kind of like that theme that we had before, it's coming back, and it's just this kind of like acceptance, I guess, of the situation, you could call it. And that through that, they kind of gain this this sense of kind of resolve at the end.
Mm-hmm. But to be sure, the most effective way to hear this piece then would be in a hall. So I suppose people can keep an eye on your website for when that might happen again.
Yeah, yeah. It was just recently performed through this kind of like partnership thing with Tempo, and at Milk Boy Art House, they're a program venue near College Park area. I try to shop this piece out as much as I can, because especially in that kind of like live performance area, I think it really does have something special about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's just applause there. I was waiting to see, I saw the increase of sound at the end. These pieces are posted on SoundCloud on the website. They're hosted from SoundCloud, and I see the sound, the sort of simple sound waves that SoundCloud provides when you're listening to these tracks. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, I suppose a little bit misleading there. I should probably take the applause out there.
I mean, you know, hey, maybe the applause can be seen as a character in the piece as well. Who knows?
Yeah, I've heard that before too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that didn't come off the wrong way.
No, no.
So that was the String Quartet number one. Again, best heard live because the environment is really the antagonist of that piece. You would say would that be a correct assessment
absolutely.
Of that?
That was you know. I had done so many other pieces with that kind of thought in mind about having things that were these opposites kind of going against each other throughout, mm-hmm. that when I came to this piece and I was writing it and I was kind of thinking, you know, if I wanted to do that kind of narrative again, and if so, how I would do it differently than I had before. And then I realized that the electronics, because I knew I wanted to have some electronic aspect to it, that they could actually play that role entirely, and then that would be a really interesting way of kind of realizing that structure again.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I enjoyed that quite a lot, and there's going to be a link to that piece, so you can listen to it without commentary, and then you can actually hear the whole thing going on, and you can play both at the same time. You can just listen to the piece, and then you can listen to the commentary, however you want to do it.
Yeah.
So the next piece that you want to look at, what would you say to follow that one would be a good one?
You know, so I think I found after especially being a conductor for with a focus on orchestras that my orchestral music takes on kind of like a different character than my what I sometimes refer to as, I guess, my toothier chamber music. So I think concertante would probably work.
Okay. Yeah, I remember actually I was talking with one of the other hosts here that... they found that, you know, 20th century composers would compose this, their orchestral music is, you know, nice and traditionally tonal, traditionally accessible, and then the chamber music is what gets more thorny, you know.
So, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's because more people will play the chamber music.
This is true.
You know, you got to sell the orchestral stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be frank, I like the thornier stuff, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but let's listen to Concertante. Who's this? Who's performing this one?
So this one is the UMD Orchestra. And actually kind of interesting thing about this piece was... So Jim Ross, who was the conductor here at UMD, mm-hmm. He was going to do Elgar's Enigma Variations. And he didn't want to, at least as I remember him saying it, I don't want to really put words in his mouth, but
of course.
He wanted to come up kind of, I guess, with a fresh way of doing those variations. And the way that he came up with it was he thought it would be interesting to kind of intersperse new works throughout that were, you know, maybe related, maybe just kind of stylistically related or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out a call for scores, and this was my first year coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote this piece and it got selected for it. And I thought they did a really wonderful job. I will say that I remember, like Concertante has some solos in it, clarinet and viola, specifically for, myself, I played clarinet, and my wife who, or my then fiance, who I was marrying the day that this was performed, and so I was in another state.
wasn't even at
the performance, actually.
So you had did you get married and then go perform, or you performed and then you had to go to a different state and get married?
No. I wasn't actually involved in this performance.
Oh, okay.
This was just the orchestra, and so. I was in a bunch of the rehearsals and they were going great. And I said, you know, thank you and good luck. I'm sure it's going to be great. And then I went off to Ohio to get married. And so the two characters in it are me and my wife, the clarinet me, and then my wife is the solo viola. And,
Does she play viola?
Yeah, she plays viola. Uh-huh. And I just remember that the solo parts were probably harder than I ought to have made them at the time. I was kind of coming off of, being the orchestral conductor or one of the orchestral conductors at my school. And so, you know, you put anything in front of them and they'll just sit down and play it. And all of a sudden I guess I didn't have that, that clout so much anymore. And I was just like, oh, okay, maybe I should have made this a little bit easier. But, you know, they, to their credit, they really worked on it and came out with, I think, something really spectacular. So.
All right. This is the Concertante by Quinn Dizon, performed on the date of his wedding. Starting with that clarinet solo.
Yep. And then here it actually comes up because I knew this was going to be part of the Enigma variations. I had this, very short quote in there from it just to, you know, kind of pay homage to the fact that I knew where it was coming from there.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, the idea behind, I guess, this kind of like ladder, the second half to this, it's a pretty short piece in here, but that, you know, like the distance in between the soloists is really never kind of like smaller and smaller, just that, it was kind of a gift for my wife. So in that sense, you know, like on our wedding day, that's kind of the same thing.
Did you know it was going to be performed on your wedding day?
No, I don't think I did. Uh-huh. I knew they were happening around the same time.
Okay.
And then I realized that I couldn't be at the performance.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, at least it was recorded, so you and your wife got to listen to it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And have the two of you performed it together?
Oh no way. we don't perform nearly as much anymore because we're consumed with like, you know, composing mostly and then teaching, and then she's also a string teacher. Uh-huh. She'll always check things for me when I ask her to.
Is your wife also a composer?
No, she's not. She's just a middle school strings teacher.
Cool.
But yeah, we have fun with that kind of stuff, at least, you know. Yeah. I have fun asking her, you know, like, will this work? And then she'll sit there and struggle and give me faces for, you know, the next little bit of time. So
and that one didn't have the applause at the end.
Was no, it? No, I think, well, that's because that was, you know, an orchestra concert where there's, you know, etiquette for how you approach those things and not supposed to applaud afterwards or something like that. So,
well, was that just one movement or was that?
Yeah. Well, because it was like interspersed through the Enigma variations. I forget exactly where it happened in there, but.
Okay. I don't know if I just didn't catch that when you said it the first time or.
No, you know, it was an interesting idea. Probably, you know, like a little strange, especially if you knew the Enigma variations coming in, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, what's this piece that's happening now?
But all of a sudden, yeah, it's like a different variation. It's an undiscovered variation.
Yeah, exactly. And we were told that we didn't even have to do variations necessarily, just to do something that wouldn't be so kind of like against what Elgar was doing in this piece, just to do something that would fit, but it could be our own style. It could be our, like, just our own anything. I still felt like I should pay homage to the fact that it was the Enigma variation. So, like, there's that quote in there, and
that is a cool idea. I mean, that is, compose. I mean, with all the pieces that are in existence that are themes and variations, I mean, there, I think that would be a cool idea to sort of compose new variations on that existing theme and sort of intersperse them within that kind of a performance.
Yeah. I remember one of the first times that I kind of came up to that idea, I thought it was really interesting. John Corleano has a piece, I think it's like Fantasy on an Ostinato, mm-hmm. and it's on Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, the Second Movement, which is super famous.
Right.
But he does some really interesting things in there. And I thought that was a really cool way of making, you know, pieces that we hear all the time, but then kind of experiencing the material in the new light. And so when this opportunity came up, I thought, you know, that would be an interesting way to do the same kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, kind of like how some composers do sort of recompositions of different works.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've actually played on the radio before. Timo Andres's new he didn't do anything to the orchestral part. But the Mozart Coronation Concerto, he wrote new cadenzas and a new piano part for the Coronation Concerto. And then...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. I haven't heard that.
It's, yeah. It's,
did you say that was Otis?
Andres.
Andres.
Timo Andres.
Yeah. Okay, Timo Andres. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Max Richter recomposition of Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Have you heard that?
Okay. I think I have heard that one. That one sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it sounds like a really interesting sort of concept, especially what you did with your piece that wasn't necessarily, didn't have to be a part of the Enigma variations, but.
Yeah, just, it felt a little odd to me to really just, you know, put such a break in there somewhere and not have some sort of awareness of what's happening around it. So
yeah,
putting that in was my way of kind of connecting it to the world I knew it would be in.
Where in the piece did it go?
I don't quite remember. I remember thinking there's no way this is going to fit. And then when I heard the whole recording back to back, I was like, oh, okay. You know,
All right.
Jim Ross, he's a smart guy. He did a good job there. That totally worked.
Is there a recording of the whole thing that can...
There probably is somewhere at UMD. I only have this one here, but I think in the archive somewhere you could probably find the entire thing.
So there currently isn't a recording of that to link to the post, but perhaps if there is one, you can send that to me and maybe.
Yeah, I'll try to find it. Maybe see if our orchestral manager has access to that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we're just about out of time for the show today. Our student composer of the month for October 2018, Quinn Dizon, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great, great just talking new music and all that stuff.
I think it's always good to talk about and keep talking about new music, and that's why I do this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we all, everyone out there appreciates what you do, I'm sure.
I hope so. I hope it's not just talking into a vacuum.
We all hope that.
the ongoing struggle of new music in the 21st century, where there is a completely different idea that everybody else thinks about when it comes to new music.
Yeah, that's the best part, though.
Yes. Thanks for listening. You can keep up with our podcast every month under the Student Composer of the Month and New Music tags on wbjc.com.